if I see a show that's like doing really well or something like that, and I want to see like what their numbers are, or if they're being featured in Apple Podcasts, I want to see what those numbers are. But I'm not curious about the numbers that are when they're being featured. I'm curious about the other numbers after they're being featured. And it's always the same. You see this gigantic spike that tells you exactly how long they were featured in Apple Podcasts. And then you see the same exact drop right afterwards.
Wow.
Unless there's an X factor.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Today, I'm joined by Elsie Escobar. Elsie's been podcasting since 2006, so nearly 15 years. And over those 15 years, she's had an incredible impact on the podcasting industry through her work at Libsyn. She podcasts live, do their own conference. She's the co-host of numerous podcasts, of which we will talk about probably all of them, and an Academy of Podcasters Hall of Fame inductee. Elsie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Alvin.
So for people who don't know much about you, can you give us a bit of your background and what you're doing in podcasting now?
Yeah, I started podcasting before it was super cool, even though when I first started, I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever found in the entire planet. So 2006, when not very many people knew very much about it, and I think I was, I called a lot of attention because at that time, there weren't very many people like me. And I say people like me because I kind of didn't fit the mold of the quintessential podcaster, which at that time was very, very heavily tech dude. That
people
had all
like
the. Actually, you know what? I couldn't even say that because it was, I think it was also an older demographic to some degree. It was at that time. I mean, I'm not aging you at all. I'm just saying that was my experience. And I was a yoga instructor. And obviously, I'm a woman. And I happened to be from El Salvador. So I was an immigrant from El Salvador, who was teaching yoga in LA, and I decided to make a podcast. I was the person that was afraid of the computer, and I thought AOL was the internet. So, so yeah, I'm dating myself. It was like way back in the day when I did all of that stuff. And in all honesty, my first big purchase ever in my entire life that I spent, that I felt at that time was a lot of money, was a PC. It was a computer. It was a laptop. I bought it off of HSN, and because it was on sale, you know, it was like one of those like, buy it now. And I was like, okay. And I bought this PC and I got it specifically because I wanted, to delve a little bit more into the world of the internet, and in it, I discovered, I think that same year that I got that computer is when I discovered podcasting, and then it kind of gave me sort of the open door for me to mess around a little bit more with technology. I actually don't know why I was obsessed with it from the beginning. I think it was because it felt outside of the norm of where I was living, and it aligned more with who I was, because LA is so it leads so much with the physical, mm-hmm. everything. Like, you look this way, you are this way. This is who, there's no moving outside of what people perceive you to be, like the end. There is no trying to be anything else. And I found that getting behind the microphone, it gave me the opportunity to just be myself. And I was all of these other things that I never got an opportunity to really talk about. And people wouldn't even want to, like, consider any roles that were like the ones I felt I could play because of the way that I looked.
Yeah. So you're talking a little bit about roles. Your background before you were doing yoga and podcasting was you were an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in LA, and of course I became a yoga teacher. I mean, that was, and I also started teaching yoga before it was cool too, before all of that stuff. So I was waiting tables, and then I started to do yoga at that time professionally. So I was an instructor for 10 years. I also pursued acting for 10 years, even though I was working a working actor for years before that as well. But I was doing that on stage. And so when you get to Hollywood, it's a whole other thing. So I think podcasting was my salvation. It was the way in which I grounded myself back into who I was. Or back into myself, back into finding my voice, back into feeling empowered, back into feeling like I could create content. Because coming from stage, I was always creating stuff. Like in our grad school program that I attended, we were given so much creative just leeway to be able to do so much, and to dream into the possibilities of being. And pursuing any kind of work, that when you come to LA, it totally diminishes all of that, and it really, again, just puts you in one spot. And I had a really hard time. I'd never had that experience so in my face, where people qualified who I was just by the way that I looked. And put me in a category, and there was no way to get out of it. And so that feeling was possibly not to make this sad, but it was like the darkest time of my life. Like I was the most, it was the first time I ever experienced anything that I would call depression, because I felt like I didn't have any power. I felt completely powerless. And getting behind the microphone was really a lifesaver for me. But actually, before getting behind the microphone, podcasters gave me the courage to do that, to find myself before I even got behind the mic. Podcasters were the ones that helped me, because listening to podcasts was like life-changing for me.
What were some of those podcasts and what were they saying?
Oh my God. This is my favorite subject. So back in the day, there were the LA podcasters. And I, at that time, because there were so little amount of podcasts in iTunes at the time, you could literally scroll through all of them. Like,
I remember.
And read them all, right? Like you could just see them all. And so you had the opportunity to be able to like choose from like 100 or 500, right? I don't remember the exact number, but it was a quantifiable amount where you could scroll through a lot of them. And after I had my initial sort of touch point of discovering what a podcast was and how cool it was for educational purposes, because I started listening to Harvard University courses that were delivered via podcast, which now has moved into podcast iTunes University, but at that time it was all in one place. So I was listening to those at first, and then inside of one of the classes that I was listening to, which was Computing 101, because that's what a big nerd I am, and because I didn't know how to use a computer, in all honesty, I didn't know it. So I started listening to this Harvard University course, and there was a promo. Well, it wasn't really a promo. It was audio feedback that was sent to that show from another podcaster called, at that time, that show was called The Typical PC User. And the host was Victor Cajiao. And he sent this piece of feedback, and I thought, oh, that sounds really cool. And obviously, when he sent the audio feedback, he said, I'm the host. You know, he pitched himself. He was just like, this is Victor from The Typical PC User. You can find me at whatever URL, right? And I was like, ooh, I got to go check that out. So I subscribed to his show. And in that, I went into the rabbit hole of finding out so many other podcasts, including my co-host, Rob Walsh, because he had a podcast 411 happening at that time, which was essentially, I do believe it was the very first, I know this is bizarro, it was the very first interview podcast that was out there. I mean, and he was interviewing podcasters, which is kind of taking us full circle here as to what you're talking about now, that this is listening to podcasting stories your audience really resonates with it, because they hear these stories and they become so full. So I started to listen to Podcast 411, And in that, he would interview other podcasters, and he would start off with, like, you know, I think it was two questions that were always the same at the beginning. And then they would just talk about their, you know, very normal. It was like, you know, 60 minutes or whatever. And I was exposed to so many podcasts that were happening at that time from people who I was like, you're podcasting? Because I thought that it was all NPR types, you know, right, that were doing this stuff. And I was exposed to all this. And in diving into the small podcast, podcaster industry, not even industry, podcasters, I got to know the LA podcasters. And so those LA podcasters were, I think, fundamentally life-changing for me because of what they were covering, who they were. I met with them in real life. Like, there was a meetup that I used to attend with them. Some of the things that they were, some of the topics that they were talking about really hit really hard where I was at that time. And there was one podcast specifically that sadly it is podfaded. And he peaked way too early. Let's put it that way. He peaked way early. And it was called the Hollywood Podcast. Tim was the host of that. And he covered his life as a working actor in Hollywood, but he did it in a storytelling type format where he would tell stories of his life as they were happening. And it was riveting. It was hilarious and deeply moving. Like, there were times where I used to walk down the street and laugh out loud and cry. Like, I was crying so hard before him because he was so intuitive. The stories were amazing. And he ended up creating a book from it. One of the very first sort of books later on, like a chapter sort of book about that. And then he, you know, I moved away from LA, so I don't know what the story was, but he's like faded out. I don't even know what he's exactly doing. I think he's producing shows for somebody else. But Tim Coyne was, I think, fundamentally brilliant when it came to creating a show, a podcast. But at that time, nobody really was listening. So,
what do you think it is that's different about podcasting from other media types like blogs and books and YouTube videos and social media? What is it that makes that connected so well with you and connects with so many people that listen to podcasts?
The intimacy aspect of it. I talk, I think, a lot to, at least for somebody who is that me, that's more like me, where I felt disconnected from my environment. I felt like I needed something. I also didn't feel quite comfortable where I was living when this happened, you know, when podcasts came into my life. And what podcasting helped me figure out at that time in listening to them is that it expanded the world for me. I began to not only get to know people that were completely different than me, but also the fact that they were just like me. So it was this really weird thing that folks all over the world that were sharing stories that were so different than my life, I could find feelings that were the same. And that expanded my life in so many different ways than it ever had before. And the other aspect of it is that it gave me the privacy. And I think that this is something that a lot of folks maybe look over, is that, and especially from the podcaster perspective, we all want people to be talking about our shows and be like, oh my God, I just listened to whatever episode. And we tell your friends, right? But there's a lot of times when our listening is, I feel it's a very private thing. Like, I don't want anybody to look at my listening list. And then not because I'm ashamed of it or I don't want you to see, but I feel like it's a private thing for me. Maybe, you know, when people show you their record collection or they show you like their special bookshelf at home or whatever, like there's only some people that you want them to start browsing through that stuff, or like your special stuff, right? When you take them out. And that's how I feel with my podcasts. And they've been able to help me go through so much of my life in a private setting where I feel like I have people talking with me in my ears and I'm able to process information and feelings and beliefs that I wouldn't be able to talk out loud with anybody. Or if I had a question about something, I process it that way and I think about it in that way. And it gives me the courage to be able to move forward from whatever that is and help me, you know, be a better person. And I think that it takes me to that private space. I think that's what it is. It's the intimacy of having somebody with you and not having the pressure to talking back.
I resonate with that in two different levels. The time that I realized that podcasting had, there was something different about podcasting. I was living overseas and teaching school in Haiti and listening to podcasts, feeling like, you know, some of the only English I would hear in a day would be listening to a podcast. And we didn't have enough internet to be able to do anything else but lightweight audio files. And I remember just feeling this very strong connection to, you know, back then it was what you're saying, iTunes. You could scroll through and look at all of the podcasts that were actually available. And you got to hear stories and connect with the hosts. And then the other piece, I know different periods of my life where I get really interested in something or I'm dealing with a particular problem, I end up subscribing to like four shows on that topic.
Yeah.
And then it's a way of like, you want to learn about, there was a time where I really wanted to learn a lot about Stoicism. So I went and subscribed to every podcast I'm on about Stoicism and listened to tons of episodes. And then when we had our daughter, I wanted to listen to all these parenting podcasts. And at each stage, when I left law and started working in marketing, I wanted to listen to a bunch of marketing podcasts and tech podcasts to learn as much as I could about those areas. And so I've never heard anyone say it that way, but I totally agree. It's why it can be uncomfortable when people say, what are your favorite podcasts?
Yeah.
And you may think, oh, it's a podcast about struggling with depression. I don't know if I want to share that with you right now.
Yeah. And so there are obviously the ones that are staples that may be a little more shareable for sure. But there have been experiences that I've had in listening to podcasts that have fundamentally shifted me as a person. And it doesn't have to, like thinking back about Tim Coyne's podcast. And also there was another one, another show for LA podcasters called Kush Things I Say. And Jim Cushney, I think is his name. And he had that show way back. And both of those shows in some way shifted who I was. And Kush, actually, I've been wanting to reach out to him at some point because he used to talk about, again, life in LA, right? It was, and all of these guys were doing what was fundamentally at that time storytelling podcasts, not in the way that we currently now storytelling is also mixed into narrative style,
right?
So you imagine that storytelling and narrative are more like the highly produced, you know, corpcasters or NPR types that are telling stories within, like one that comes into mind, and it's, you know, the wonderful podcast 1619, where it even like at the beginning in that first, the entrance of that first episode for 1619 blew my mind just because of the audio feeling and the story, like it, that was real deep, like way deep. But these specific from LA podcasters were, it's kind of like something that happened to them in their life, right? Like something that happened to them in their everyday life. And they would get behind the microphone and they would just kind of embellish and dramatize their stories through their voices. So there wasn't extra like sounds and stuff. It was mainly them telling the story and just a normal story, but it was very specific. It's like they were acting, but not really, because it sounded like they were just talking to you. Anyway, Kush would say, tell these stories about a men and women and from his point of view as a man. And he's distinctly, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to say this. He was talking about, like, he had a wife, and he was talking about coming into something happened, and he mentioned how there was like this one, he was coming discussing about women, and like he was like, ladies, if your boyfriend hasn't asked you to marry him after, you know, insert whatever amount of years or whatever, he's like, he's not going to marry you. Just know that. And in the way that he was saying it, right? At that time, I had been with my person, with my ex, for over a decade. Wow. And there was no conversation about anything related to getting married, like at all. And I got really pissed off at him. Like, I was just like, how dare he? He doesn't know me. He doesn't know us. Like, mind you, he doesn't know me. I mean, he knew me, but right. He didn't know that I was listening to his show having this reaction, right? It's not like I did not reach back to him and say anything. I just was like pissed. I was pissed. And I kept like, but I could not get his voice out of my head. And the way that he went through relationships from the male point of view and all of this stuff, like I kept listening to him. He was completely opposite of me. He was obviously incredibly, you know, cis relationship, talking about that and that he being a man and all this stuff. And I was just like, what a douchebag. And from within, right? But at the same time, he was dropping some truth, man. And nobody had ever talked to me that straight up about relationships from a man's point of view. And it fundamentally shifted my mindset that eventually, fueled by his voice, I left that relationship.
Wow.
And I'm in a really wonderful place. Like, I love my husband. Obviously, I have babies. It's unbelievable. And I trace it all the way back to that seed of him saying that in his show. And it's one of those things where I just kind of want to turn back and be like, that influence, that moment changed my whole life.
It's so interesting when you can actually pinpoint these like turning points in your life, specific things you hear. And I don't know about you, but I personally love going back to the people who said the thing or like mentioned something offhandedly. One big change for me was listening to an early Freakonomics episode where they talked about the power of quitting and basically how we shouldn't moralize quitting, that you should quit things that aren't working for you and move on. But for some reason, we always have this like tendency to hold on and say, no, mm-hmm. I can fix this thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to it. I just graduated law school. And I remember thinking like, yeah, of course, everyone knows you should quit stuff if it's not working. That doesn't make any sense. I'm the kind of person who'd quit. And then fast forward like 2 years after that, I hate practicing law. Like, cannot stand it. It was everything that I didn't want to be. And I looked 10 years down the road and realized I would only become less of who I wanted to be in the future. And I remember that episode sat there in my head, reminding me, not only did you listen to this, but you were offended that it was even like had to be said because it was so obvious to you then. But now that I'm in it, I'm thinking, well, I can't make less money and go work somewhere else. You know, I spent all this time going to law school and practicing law and doing all this work. And now I'm just going to throw it away. What if the next thing is just as bad or worse? And yeah, it's so interesting to hear you having kind of a similar experience with a podcast kind of being a turning point and telling you, you know, maybe sometimes they can tell us when it's time to move on to other things.
Some of the things about that are, I think, poignant as a listener and to inspire folks to listen to podcasts are things like that, right? It also, though, it's something that I really try to teach folks that are getting into podcast or are podcasters and that are constantly looking to grow their audience, right? And I know how that a lot of us, and I value it as well, feel that having a larger user, obviously, you know, big stuff makes more stuff.
Right.
You know, it just, whatever. You get, you know, you have more X, you get more Y. That's the way our culture is set up, which is one of the reasons why am I... In my Instagram, like right now, I've like, I don't do anything on Instagram at all. I just don't have time. But anyway, I have like a thing that says like we, something about like more is not, does not equal better. But that's just something I'm trying to move forward and like really bring forth all the time and everything that I do. And so thinking about it from the perspective of there's going to be a time when I listen to a podcast like I did for Kush Things I Said, that obviously doesn't exist now, but maybe it did. But maybe I'm not a listener anymore. Maybe I haven't listened in 5 years. I'm not a download for him. Mm-hmm. But yet he has impacted my life and caused all this. Or like right. Essentially, who was the catalyst for this?
We're starting to touch on it a little bit. How you speak to tens of thousands of podcasters and you've influenced tens of thousands of podcasts. And I think many of them, one thing they're all trying to figure out is how to get a bunch of downloads.
Yeah.
How should we be thinking about that?
So I always teach podcasting is an embodied experience. And we are human beings that are in the act of listening. And that I feel is one of the fundamental differences within this kind of media, right? And so given that, I do feel very strongly that as a podcaster, somebody that's really, really wanting to grow their show, that you need to listen to podcasts. Not all of them, yeah. Not many all the time, but you've got to engage in the act of listening to podcasts. You must do it. And if you hate it, this is great, because then you can figure out what the points are of you resisting the listening, because many people are going to go through that. If you have pain points when you are listening to a podcast that really bother you, write those down, because that is probably what many folks are going through. If it gives you delight when you're listening, if you are, you know, and the opposite is true. If there's something that really rocks your world, if you happen to have had something happen, because this happens all the time. I'm in the middle of washing dishes. Usually I get triggered. And that's the other thing. We get triggered. We have habits of consumption. And so we get triggered, particularly for me, for listening to stuff. If I'm washing dishes, that's one of the places that I listen to all the time that immediately gets triggered. If I start to wash dishes, I'm like, oh, where's my podcast? And I have to go find my podcast to listen. And then I'm listening to them and they're like, hey, if you want to do the thing, you got to sign up for the blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah. And then my hands are all sudsy. And I'm like, oh, I gotta remember that. Okay. And I'm washing. And then, you know, my children come. And then by the end of the day, I completely forget.
Right.
So there's no direct, like when you're on the computer, sometimes you get somebody that sends you the email and you immediately respond, or like, you know, Twitter. Like we've had conversations on Twitter, and it's easier for me to respond that to you. Whereas if you were asking me a question in your podcast that you know that I'm listening to, I'd be like, oh my God, I have to remember to respond to Alvin because he called me out on a show. Okay. You know, and it's like, I will forget. And so the process of that relationship looks passive. It looks like they're not engaging with you, but there's a lot of people who are deeply embedded in that. You are deeply embedded in their life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't like just become magically a lot, right? I don't know if you've seen this in terms of stats, because I've always liked to look at stats. I have access to a lot of stats as well. And being able to see like, I'll go lurking if I see a show that's like doing really well or something like that. And I want to see like what their numbers are, or if they're being featured in Apple Podcasts, I want to see what those numbers are. But I'm not curious about the numbers that are when they're being featured. I'm curious about the other numbers after they're being featured. So then like I will look at those numbers, like let's say they're featured in February, and I will just make a little note for myself and I'll go back and check in 3-4 months later. And it's always the same. You see this gigantic spike that tells you exactly how long they were featured in Apple Podcasts. And then you see the same exact drop right afterwards.
Wow.
Unless there's an X factor. Unless there's an X factor.
What's the X factor?
The X factor usually has to do with the quality of the content, and also the relevance of the topic at that time, which we can't know what that's going to be like. One of my favorite shows way back was Pantsuit Politics, and they started with Libsyn way back, and they started their show, I think, at the end of 2015, if I'm correct, right before the election. And the concept for Pantsuit Politics is that it was one Republican, one Democrat. And at that time, too, they had a little thing that they said it was nuanced conversation. So they were really deep into kind conversation with each other, super smart. Both of them are amazing. And they were just talking with each other in a way that we often don't hear, let alone women talking like this in a civilized manner, in depth about politics from two completely different points of view in one show and not yelling at each other, right? So All of that stuff was like, but when it started, obviously it was like really intriguing. But then the election, the whole thing started to happen. And the need for them, for that voice, was so just magic that it just catapulted them and continued to, and mind you, they're really good at what they're doing. So it's not like, you know, they're fantastic. But the timing of that, you could not have timed it better, right? And without knowledge of what was going to happen in our world at that time. So the necessity for them was so huge. And that's an X factor that I've seen time and time again with a lot of shows that come out there. It's the right time, the right topic, and culture needs it at that time. The world needs this. And oftentimes that can't be repeated in that same way. Exactly. You can't just like, let's do another politics podcast, because it won't really have that same thing as when it first started that way.
I could think of an example on the Buzzsprout side. We had it was a doctor who, I think he was maybe an epidemiologist, but he was just like, he would talk about different viruses and try to explain disease. And 2011 or 12, he did an episode on Ebola, but Ebola was a really small thing that very few people knew about. So he went in depth, talked about it, and moved on. 2013, he's frantically writing into support saying, guys, I think there's a bot or something bad is happening. My podcast numbers like are broken. And we went in and we said, they don't look broken. They look great. And we dug in a little deeper and we're like, no, it's an episode from 2011 that is skyrocketing. And then actually people are continuing to listen to your other episodes. Well, what had happened was we had the Ebola epidemic, and when that happened, people were needing to learn about, all right, what's happening here? How does this, is it transmitted? What are the symptoms? What do you do? What do we need to do as a, you know, a world to combat this? And he already had that all out there. He was needed at that time. So I wouldn't recommend someone now, hey, go put out a bunch of episodes about coronavirus and any potential diseases, because that is what worked in the past. It'll be something different next time, but kind of creating this evergreen content, stuff is really highly produced, and sometimes it does take getting lucky. Like, you're having civilized discussions about politics, and all of a sudden we have the least civilized election of all time. And everyone goes, hey, maybe it would be nice to hear something from a different perspective.
Yeah. So that's like what the X factor to me looks like, you know, and it's in the same way, the way marketing works, where there are those different things where, for me, marketing is more about visibility. It's more about getting to know a podcast or getting to be exposed to that even just the fact that this podcast exists is the first step. And that's where I think most marketing lies within that. Listenership is a totally, it's a different thing. But at that point, it's just that sense of expansion, right? And that's what happens sometimes when you are featured in a lot of these audio platforms, which I think is the most, it's probably the least obstacle-filled way to get more listeners to your show, to get more people who follow your show, right? That would be it. But for a lot of folks, it's especially whenever you are featured within Apple Podcasts or something, it is a taster. It's like, people are like, oh, that looks neat. And they will just click on it. And they will click on it and they may or may not listen to it. They may really like it and follow the show, or they may just leave it there. And most of the time, they're just going to leave it there because you're not for everyone. Right. I was just thinking about, you know, I mean, I'm sure you have a show about podcasting that is, you know, Buzzsprout centric. I have a show about podcasting that's Libsyn centric. And so it's like my expectations of that show. I think we're doing fine. You know what I mean? I don't have like, let's get thousands of listeners, because it's like, it's so like, I wouldn't want everybody to listen to my show. In fact, right. Most people would probably listen and go like, what is even happening here? That's the worst thing I've ever heard. Cause it's not, unless you know it, you're not going to want to listen. It's just, I don't, you know?
Yeah. So, you need to know your audience. And part of, if when you really know your audience, you can cater the message to them, and that will often, to people who aren't in the in your target audience, will see it and go, this isn't for me. Well, yeah, it's not. If you're a, you know, if you're a Buzzsprout customer listening to the feed, you're going to be confused when you hear we're working on Libsyn 5 and here's a new feature that just came out. They're right. going to go, well, that's not applicable because I don't use that hosting provider. And so, or if somebody's not a podcaster at all and they're listening to it, they'll go, well, what's up with all the podcasting news that keeps getting talked about?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and it, mind you though, I'm also incredibly obsessive about stuff. Like one show that I fell in love with and now I'm totally obsessed with it. And I think it was like The Psychographic, why I was drawn in. But it was because it was called, it is, it's one of my favorite shows. It's called The Pen Addict. And I couldn't understand, I couldn't wrap my head around, because I saw it a lot, how someone could talk for 60 to 90 minutes
about pens. I listened to it.
Yeah. So anyway, I didn't get it because I used to see it, right, way back. I'm like, how is that even a thing? Right? And so then I did started to listen to it and I had no idea about pens, like zero idea, like nothing. I have always liked, you know, markers and drawing, and I always liked notebooks and stationery. So I do like that stuff. I've always been a fan of colored pens, but not like fancy pens. Right. And so, but in the process, it becomes my happy place where I learned about all these things, but they're like sort of like washing my palate out of anything that is, I'm not discounting that pens aren't important, but you know what I mean? Hearing somebody be so passionate about a subject, I just get so riveted by it, even though I have no stake in the game. I'm just like, this is so neat. I didn't know that that even existed. And I just go about my business, but it has no, there's no stress involved. There's no like, deeper thinking, like super deep thinking that I have to do. It's just like, neat. I didn't know that paper existed. I like that. I think I'm going to get that at some point. You know what I mean?
I have like, there's a handful of podcasts. My favorite podcasts are all, I feel like, very heavy and very more like intellectual. I have to be really focused and paying attention. But then I have all these other podcasts that I like love because they're, hey, I kind of need a break. I just want to like listen to something and kind of relax, and I'm doing something else, and I don't want to feel like, oh, I've got to rewind that and re-listen to that part to understand it or take notes. Yeah. And it sounds like that's what the Pen Addict is doing for you.
Yeah.
It's low stakes. We need some low stakes podcasts.
Of course. And again, Mind you, there are folks that love the Pan Addict podcast because it is high stakes. So it's there. You know what I mean? So you move it in different places. They might also have a show that is totally low stakes for them, but maybe not Penn's, right? Like they're just like really into this stuff. And part of it is the passion that you bring to your stuff is what's going to make people stay. And sometimes they will be converted to it and they'll like really dive in, and then sometimes they won't. And I feel that that's where what coming back to like download numbers and all of that, you again, I feel that you have to solve your own, you have to really dive into what keeps you listening. Like in the way that we're talking about it, like what the types of people that are listening, it's okay if they only listen once a month. It's okay. But you keep doing your own thing. You have to figure out why you're podcasting, right? And if it really is worth it for you. And in the same way that you were talking about quitting, what I've seen now since I've been here for so long and in the space for so long is that there is a cycle for all of us as humans, that where we go and we evolve into a different person, a more evolved person of who we are. We change. We just have different feelings. And so if we look back at 5 years before now, I can see how I've grown. I see that I'm not interested in some of the things that I was interested before. And I always feel, and I've felt like, maybe you don't want to talk about the thing that you were so into when you first started podcasting. And so it's okay for you to quit it. It's okay. I know that for me, I still love to talk about, like, I can't not talk. Like, that's what's a big trigger thing for me. I haven't found a place where I'm like, oh, I got to talk about this again. I still love it so much. It hasn't stopped since I began because it fills me in so many different ways. But there are a lot of but like my yoga podcast, I had to let it go. It's still painful for me to even say that because I haven't produced anything since 2013. But it's a huge part of who I am as a yoga person. But I don't want to teach it. Like I can't, and it's such a hard lift. I'm like, oh man, if I have to go behind the mic and teach a class, I don't have it in me. Like, I just know it. That's not who I am anymore. It's in my past. It's part of me, but it's not the thing that leads. And, you know, so I think in podcasting, that happens to a lot of folks where they're really passionate about a specific thing and they start to talk about it. And then it's over. And it's even worse, Alban. I don't know if you've had this interaction with somebody when they're doing really well with their show. And it's actually incredibly, I'm using air quotes now, successful. And they have all the things, the download numbers, like the funnels or whatever, everybody's covering them and all this stuff. And they're like, I'm done. I'm done. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, privately, I've had those conversations and you go to things like Podcast Movement and you talk to people there and you realize there's some podcasters who are doing incredibly well because they love their subject, and some they loved it and they've now podcasted about it for 4 years. And they're like, I don't love this the same way I used to, but I don't know if I can like stop because I've hit this level. And, you know, now I have this loyal audience that keeps wanting to hear about it. What do you say to podcasters when they hit that point where they're actually successful and maybe the thing that they started the podcast about, they're not interested in doing anymore?
My gosh, I would say the same thing that you shared with me just a little while before about the whole quitting thing. One of the reasons that I stepped away from Elsie's yoga class as well was, it's hard for me to feel like I'd let that go because of really the interaction that I had with my people that used to come to my classes. And I had a very rabid following, and there were folks who I was a huge part of their lives, of their actual, like, well-being. And I realized that there was a part of me that didn't want to be that for them. I was taking care of myself. You know, I had just had two babies. And the reason that I stopped is because I could no longer hold them and my actual offspring, right? Like I could not split myself like that. I had enough with my little ones. And in that respect, I had to be honest with the fact that I was only doing this for them. And that's when you have to start to think about it, where it's like, are you really just doing it for them? And are they going to be okay? I tried to transition out of it, maybe not in the best way, because I kept thinking I was going to come back and then I never did. But you have to be honest whether or not this is going to be your life. Like this is in the same way you were talking about, I really hate law. Maybe you started at the beginning and you were like, oh, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, I just don't want to be here. Then you stop. And I know that that's hard. In the same way that I, you know, left Los Angeles, I left LA because I just could no longer do and live the way that I was living. And I really thought there was no way that I could leave my life as it was at that time. I really thought there was no out. And then I just left. I mean, there were many other circumstances, but I literally picked up and I left Los Angeles within a month, moved out and have not come back other than to visit my parents once. You know, I left everything, an entire career. I had a career. I had it all, everything. And I just picked up and left. And it was the best thing I could have ever done. I don't know what I would be doing if I was in LA at this time. You know, it was just way too much. But in that same way, it's going to be okay. And I think that this is when we start to think now that our industry is now moving beyond, you know, we're moving into what, year 16 or 17, where we have the industry now has legacy to it. Mm-hmm. Now you can put shows away. You can say that's the time of X, right? You don't have to keep doing the show. It can be done. And if you still love podcasting, you can get behind the mic. You could try to do something else. I don't know. I just feel that that's going to take away from you growing as a human being. You know who I was thinking about this, Alvin? With Alexander Cooper from Call Her Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really great at doing what she's doing right now, being the age that she is. And in that, and her audience obviously is a younger audience, right? A younger demographic all the way across the board. And so she's really targeted to those folks. But she's not going to stay 26, 27 forever. Mm-hmm. And think about what happened with us between 27 and 30 and who we were and who we ended up being. How about when we were, you know, 32, 33? And I know that was a huge growth that I had at that time. And then if you keep, and can you imagine if somebody held you at 26 or 27 and then you had to continue to be that person the whole time?
Yeah, that was the period that I was very excited to leave. That was the years of doing 12 hours a day of legal work. So I was happy to move on from that.
Yeah, but I mean, like the person, like the what you talked about, how you talked, how you interacted with people, maybe like, I don't, you know, I'm not wanting you to disclose any of this stuff, but like the way that you were like dating or seeing people or going out or your friends.
Yeah.
Right.
So much changes. So with the podcast, should people, the way they think about it is if you do have one of these shows that's very focused on your personality, and maybe part of that personality is like, hey, I'm this particular age going through this particular time and people that resonate with it. Should you just be updating the show kind of constantly? And as you are changing and just say, yeah, we're not talking about dating and partying as much. And now we're talking about yoga and we're talking about parenthood. And yeah, this is the way you're growing up with the podcast with me. And you just are shifting who the audience is?
That's exactly how I would approach it. Because there's no, if not, you're going to get stuck in that. You have to revisit it, especially if it's around that. If it's a specific topic, I think if you're covering a subject matter and it's less about you going through things, then absolutely. I mean, even one of my, one of the folks that I've listened to for a long time and also who is somebody that I mentor, Casey Orority is her name, and her show is Joyful Courage. It was a parenting podcast when I met her. She had smaller little babies, and she is a positive parenting coach. And it was great, you know, great show from the beginning, and talking about positive parenting primarily for like 2, 3, 4 year olds, right? Her kids were slightly older. And then all of a sudden, you know, one of the last times that I worked with her, she was going through a real hard time because she didn't want to talk about 2, 3, 4 year olds anymore because her kids were tweens and teenagers. Right. And she was so much more interested in that because that was her life at that time. She, you know, she was relearning so many things, and it's a completely different thing to parent a 4 year old than it is a teenager. In many ways, not all, but many. And so, so she wanted to move. She goes, I don't know what to do because everybody's asking me about toddlers and I don't want to talk about toddlers. So she shifted her whole thing and she started to teach her listeners, this is where I'm moving forward. And so we worked it out so that she was able to then send folks, like, if you're interested about this, you can listen to these episodes and then here. And then she started to guide folks to, these are other coaches that are focusing in on your age group. And then she facilitated that transition to other places so that she could really stay doing what she's doing. And she's still doing her show. Mind you, the title of her show also allows for that expansion. Because if it would have been like the toddler show, you know, or parenting 2 year olds, then it's a little harder to move to a teenage conversation. So it gives it the expansion for it, you know?
One thing I tell people a lot, especially a stumbling block I see a lot with new podcasters, is show art and the title, because they're like, have this feeling that they're etching this in stone. Yeah. And this is the title. This is the art. This is locked in forever. And I'm like, not, because you can just change the title and it updates in everyone's app and they'll go, huh, that's a new title. And some pretty popular podcasts have done this, and you tell people, hey, just to let you know, the artwork's going to change. It's still the same podcast, or it's a very similar podcast. Oh, the name, I'm going to change the name. This name never really made, you know, doesn't make much sense because how the podcast is changing. So I'm going to make that move. You know, we don't have to feel like everything is locked in, because just like people, podcasts can evolve too.
Yeah. And it's so much better than, you know, if you published a book, right? If you published a book, you can change the cover usually. But I mean, I guess you could change the title too and you could get a reprint. But it's so much easier.
It's much easier.
It's so much easier. And but then there are folks that get really caught up with the, like, their RSS feed having their old branding on it. And a lot of the time, I'm like, who's going to see that? Honestly, who's going to look at your RSS feed and go, oh my God, it has a different name on it? Like, I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at anybody's RSS feed in a long time, meaning, you know, without minus work, right? That's a different story. But if, like, somebody's, like, when you're subscribing to people's shows, usually you just do it on your app.
On the Buzzsprout side, I think we don't even support people having custom names for their RSS feed. The only thing we do is it's just a string of numbers. So yeah. The numbers never change, so people never get too attached to them. But for anybody who's kind of confused, Libsyn has the ability for you to actually have it to be like, it would be something like thefeed.libsyn.com/RSS.
Yeah, it's made like for the, yeah, it's for the, what do you call it? It's the slug, or like the,
right,
what you sign up for that is part of the, you know, like when you sign up for like Instagram, and it's like Instagram.
Part of that URL.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And so, but even like things like FeedBurner or, you know, all of that stuff, where it used to be at least it was a thing before. It has to be, because I remember doing that. I'm like, what am I going to make? that URL. And even in FeedBurner, when I burned my feed, because I did that way back as well, which is a program that burns feeds. And you don't even, I'm sure most people are like, what does burn feed? But anyway, it created a specific feed that people could, you know, subscribe to that was just the numbers and stuff, and or the letter or whatever you wanted to name it. Like you could name it, you could put words in it. And so folks would get very attached to that. But given that though, yes, you can change your title. You can change all the things.
2014, you started She Podcasts, started out as a Facebook group for women in podcasting, and it has grown to so much more. Can you tell us about She Podcasts and how it started?
Yeah, it started, you know, it was Jessica. Jessica started my partner, my business partner. She started, and BFF, she started this Women Who Podcast or Women Podcast, I don't know, whatever. It was something like that, and podcasters. Because what happened is when we would attend conferences, we would hook up with a lot of the women would get together and we would have lunch and all that stuff. And it felt so comfortable and yummy that we felt like she felt, I want to have a space where we continue conversations like this outside of conferences and also not the existing groups that were happening at that time. So she started that just for herself, essentially, with a small group of people. She invited the people that we had lunch with. And then I brought all these people because I had all of these other names. And then I just started to add people to the group and all the stuff. And then as that started to grow, Jess and I kind of pitched her on She Podcast because everybody in the group was asking, we need to have a show about podcasting for women and blah, blah, all this stuff. And we're like, oh my God, we got to do it. We got to do it before they do it. And so like we started a show under the idea that we would talk about podcasting from the women's point of view and really address women-centric conversations. But what ended up happening is, again, because this is what happens. That was the idea we had. Jess and I didn't really know each other very much. And so that was a concept. But as we got to know each other and became really close friends, it essentially morphed into the Jess and Elsie show sprinkled with podcasting, right? So it's like we talk about our lives, and it's really just lots of fun. It's more fun than anything. We almost rarely stay on topic. We do cover podcasting news, information, tools, like things like that, but we don't do it like hard hitting and we're not very tactical about it. We try, but we always fail. So might as well go with the flow, right? So that's what it is. But mind you, that continued to expand. We have now over 20,000 women in the Facebook group, which is crazy. Then Jess really championed putting She Podcasts Live out, which is a conference that is very much centering women's voices and women in non-binary podcasters. So that's the other thing too, is that we expanded from women-centric only to women and non-binary in our group, because I really felt that women have started to get a little more expansion in podcasting as a whole, and there is more of our voices out there, but there's always a need for the same type of expression and the same type of support for those who oftentimes are not heard, which is why we started the podcast. And non-binary folks right now are often not really seen, and they don't really fit in any different place sometimes. And we thought, like, this is possibly the best place for folks to come in to our group, even though it is called She Podcast. But remember, it's Jess and I that run the group, which is She Podcast. And you can always evolve and move. So we have expanded to include that. Anyway, that said, the conference itself is very much about making sure everybody on stage is a woman or non-binary. There are no men speaking at our conference. And even though you can attend if you're a man, it is just centered on women. So you'll have a great time. But again, the content it's very centric to the folks that we are serving. And that is it. And it's been an incredible experience to be able to expand and grow all of that aspect of it. We also have the She Podcast Super Squad, which is a membership community, because we have found that our time becomes more and more precious. So we can't really just be in the group in the same way. I used to be obsessed with that group. I was in there all day, every day. And as my life has changed, again, my desire to be in Facebook has lessened so much that I just don't want to. And I want to cultivate richer, deeper relationships. And in all honesty, Alvin, I don't know if you feel this, but I really don't want to answer the same questions over and over again about the same stuff.
You have like a limit of maybe like 1,000 times you can recommend the Samsung Q2U or the ATR 2100. At some point you're like, I'm starting to burn out.
Yeah. So I have a harder time with that. And so I would like to have folks come into the Super Squad where I can have deeper relationships. And I know that the time that I spend deep diving into why the Q2U is probably one of the best microphones to start with can really be appreciated because of all the nuance I could bring to that conversation in so many different places than writing it out, right? Somewhere. So the Super Squad is where I get to really just let you know or really invest my time in the specificity of who you are as a podcaster versus just random people. Because I feel like sometimes people in the Facebook group, they're not invested in the answer sometimes. They don't, they just want all the answers and then they still don't know. And I'd rather everybody sift through the crud. Not the crud, because there's a lot of people who are really smart too. So I'm not, I don't mean it that way. I mean, just get the answer that you want. Because I know right now I'm just like, should I use this tool or that tool? Tell me and I will do that. Like, I don't need to you know, I don't need all the stuff. When I need an answer, I'm going to go like, you tell me, please.
For anyone who hasn't listened to She Podcast, the podcast, it's absolutely hilarious. You and Jessica have like the best chemistry. And I'd listened to the podcast before, but I listened to a few episodes prepping for our conversation. And I just found myself like cracking up, like laughing out loud multiple times an episode. I think that it is true. Once you hit a certain point where, you know your co-host, you have really good chemistry, and you're both comfortable like taking the conversation off on a tangent for a little bit and then coming back to the topics that you have, it's super well done. And I recommend it to anybody who's looking for a good podcast. And even if you're not a huge podcast junkie like we are, it's still really good. It could fit that perfect, like what the Pen Addict is for Elsie. Yeah, it could fit that like, hey, it's a low stakes environment. It's going to be fun. You're going to enjoy it. And you'll get to hear some stories. This is a conversation that's been coming up for me, at least in a few times recently. What is the experience for women podcasters? At least, how is that different than it probably is for male podcasters?
I think part of it is, and I am generalizing. This is not like set in stone, but I'm kind of moving more into like the historical gender roles and the way that culture treats those that are women or girls. I'm not even sure if this is happening right now to our younger folks, like my children. But the exposure, I think, overall to tech is not quite there. Like the way that I went into it, being able to be comfortable around technology was a huge challenge for me. I didn't understand getting over my own self when I would ask a question and then they would give me the actual answer and then I would read the answer and it looked like it would gibber. Like I was like, I don't even know what that means. Like I would get the answer from really kind people. So it wasn't, they were not mansplaining to me. They literally just gave me the answer. I was like, I don't know what that is. So I would have to go search for that. And even then searching for that, I couldn't understand. And I think that's possibly one of the bigger issues when it comes to podcasting, because there's like microphones, there's like, you know, like all the names for the things and USB and XLR and what that is. And there's a mixer and there's the thing and you have to do a double ender and a mix minus. And it's like, what the heck is all that stuff? And I think the questions that we have around it is, it feels a little like, ugh, that's kind of not cool. And the other thing is, you know, I was just talking to a new app or product that's coming out. And I kind of talk with them a little bit about the way that they were positioning the product that was incredibly like focused on what most people want, which is making money, right? And it was all like, make money podcasting, you're going to be rich, you know, and which most people want to get rich, which is true. And they want to make money podcasting. Yes, that is true. But in fact, our folks are slightly less so in that same way. They're more focused on their voices and impact and connecting with people and caring about their audience at a really deep level and having so many things that they're doing and they can't really do that. And so that experience for, I feel, in the way that the world is set up, sometimes women are not supported to do things like this, where we get the tools. The, you know, I would tend to say, like, I don't know if I want to invest in a microphone. Like, it took me forever to buy expensive, what I considered expensive pieces of hardware, because I'd rather spend it on clothes for my children. Not to say that it's not true, but like, I feel that, like, my husband just came in the other day and he's like, oh yeah, I got another $300 router, because he's trying to set up like all this whole thing. And I'm like, no, the routers has to be like $190 because the other ones, like, you know what I mean? Like, and he's just like, get the best thing, get the thing that works. This is like the optimal blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, given the circumstances of how I'm going to be doing the thing, like I have a lot more in my own head, which again, I'm overgeneralizing here, but that feels to me that it's a more of a challenge. It's just the basics of the technology and even the overall how everything works. We are better, I feel, at crafting the message, the story, the audience, the content. It's much deeper and richer. But when it comes to the, and so the concept, like, it's amazingly fleshed out, right? And it's like, wow, the image, the artwork is fantastic. The title is great. The description, the content, you're nailing it. Amazing. We're like, yay. And then they're like, okay, I'm getting ready for my interview in a couple hours. How do you record somebody? And you're like, holy crap. Right? And then they want like, just what's the easiest? Oh my God. You know, it's like, wait a minute. So it's, you know, it's things like that where, like, I just got a question, I don't want to go on too long, but I just got a question from somebody, and this is a really great question, but it was like, how do I record two people in the same space, in the same place, with two USB microphones and one computer? No extra stuff. Like, no buying new things.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah. And so, exactly. And so when we go to, and she podcasts, what we do to support this is that we do our darnest way to figure out the solution given what they have, given what we have, versus, well, you need to get a Focusrite, you know, 2i2, and you have to get yourself either another couple microphones so that they actually have an XLR, or you have to have a USB to UXL, you know what I mean? And then that's what the answer is usually. And they're like, whoa, what is that? Whereas I would end up sometimes going like, just take out your iPhone and put it in between you guys and record to some degree, right? I mean, there's obviously other answers, but if it's the basic, the thing that's going to get you to stay podcasting, that's where I feel like you just got to go. It's okay to let go of the dogma. So I think at least in She Podcast, we're not stuck in the dogma of podcasting, which sometimes becomes a little crazy.
It can be a little overbearing if you're a new podcaster and the first thing you hear is, we need to have this particular setup and you need to be doing this to your audio and you need to be promoting on these 7 social media platforms and you need to be cutting up your episode into clips and editing with this and doing this mastering. And you're like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah,
this isn't a full-time job. I want to share stories about, you know, my experiences doing whatever. whatever passion or hobby I have. I want to just teach yoga classes on a podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't want to become a audio mastering genius.
Right. So exactly.
Yeah, as podcasting has continued to grow, we definitely need to let go more of that dogma and accept, like, podcasts, like everything, kind of have to start out imperfect. It's not going to be this perfect thing when it starts. And it's only through the process of doing the thing, whether it be podcasting or anything else, it's during the process of doing it that actually lets us grow and develop to actually become masters of our craft, rather than, you know, thinking you're going to put all the work in on the front and become a great editor without ever putting out an episode or something like
that. Right? Yeah. I mean, you can't. The end.
One thing that I have heard that I'd love for you to speak to is women in podcasting just get a lot more grief, it seems like. I've talked to Kate Casey, who does a show called Reality Life with Kate Casey. She talked about how many more women in podcasting get just negative reviews. It's not a ton of like 4-star. It's every once in a while, there's somebody goes out of their way to leave a pretty nasty review or gets a DM on Twitter that's just kind of just mean about the podcast. And I mean, I can tell you from my perspective, every once in a while, I get like one person who's a little rude, but it's very rare. And most of them, you know, comes off like the person themselves has got something going on. It never feels like it's reflecting on me. Do you see that? And then what advice do you give to women if they're experiencing that?
Oh, God. Yes, I do. I see that. You know, for me, actually, my very first reviews for both Elsie's yoga class and for the feed were scathing. And they were all about me and my voice, like straight up.
Wow.
The first review that I had for the feed, I put an episode 0 out. And this was 2013, but I put it out. It was like literally, I think it was like 8 minutes. It's coming. You know, this is a quick introduction of who I was, what you to expect. And obviously at that time, I didn't know what to expect, but it was just like that, real lighthearted, just the way that I generally am. Right. And I put that out. The first interview, it said something like, who is this girl? Who does she think she is? She sounds like she's... And then they said something about my setup that it didn't sound right. And where's Rob?
At this point, you'd been podcasting for 7 years.
Yeah.
I went back and actually listened to episode 1 of the feed earlier today.
Uh-huh.
And it's a professional podcast. Like, you're not a new podcaster by any means. This is a podcast that's, you've been doing it for 7 years and it shows.
Yeah. It's
so how do you respond to that stuff?
I got, obviously that hurt my feelings a lot. It hurts. It makes you feel, because it's a personal attack. I'm telling you, it's not like I hate the show. It's a personal attack. And when She Podcast has gotten bad reviews, usually it's who do they think? That's the other thing. Who do you think you are? Is the response that we often get. And it's like, we don't think we're anybody. And it does hurt. And She Podcast for Elsie's yoga class, it was more like she talks too much. Mind you, it is a yoga class and I did talk too much. So that was cool. but in that respect, it's just about, or she really likes to hear herself talk. And I think part of it is that oftentimes, again, culturally, even my mom said this to me. She's like, you talk too much about my podcast, about She Podcasts. And I was like, Mom, it's a podcast. That's the point.
There's not supposed to be a bunch of dead space.
All right. And so what I would say about that is part of it is... Well, I don't look at reviews. I just don't. I don't, because I can't handle them very well, especially the negativity that comes from them, and because they really strike me deep. And And I know that they don't have, you know, I know all the things. I know all the things that I say to my people. But part of it is that I just try to, you know, there's, I don't need to see them. I don't need to look at them. And if I do get like outreach from somebody that is super, super negative, I do my very best to turn things around. I'm not somebody who's going to dismiss people and be combative with them. I'm not a combative person. I try to be very emphatic and or like to listen to what the truth is behind what they're saying to me. Not to say that I'm constantly doing that, but I do like to hear whenever criticism or feedback comes my way, critical feedback, I try to see what the truth is on that and I try to adjust whether or not I believe that to be true. And then I get a little feedback when it comes to that. Now, when it's a thing that's just about me and my voice and all that stuff, I still have a hard time dealing with that because I'm sure I'm not everybody's cup of tea either. Oh, there she goes again. Or, I mean, I know myself too when I'm editing. I cut out half of the giggles that I have because I tend to giggle a lot. So I'm getting better at cutting out my giggles by my own choice. But it's part of it is that we have to really understand to continue to go through that process and to do everything that you possibly can to keep you going. That's it. To me, it's moving away any obstacle in your way that's going to in some way diminish the work that you are doing in the world. I don't want to have that. Jess is the opposite. She likes to read stuff and she likes to be like, she likes to fight it.
Not the fighter. Jessica is definitely the fighter.
Yeah, she's the fighter. She will call you out. She reads the stuff on air and I'm always like, oh. And I'm not the fighter, but do whatever fills you and do whatever you need to feel your voice moving out there. I personally don't like to read any kind of reviews, negative or positive. So all those services like our my friend, you know, Daniel Lewis with my podcast reviews and stuff like that, I don't want to see it. I don't care about that. I don't want to see it. I don't like it. So I just don't. That's how I handle it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty intuitive thing to notice that if it's not healthy, it's not adding something to your life, and all it really is doing is providing like an attack vector for people just to throw negativity into your life. Yeah, it's not useful. It's not edifying. Yeah. And you have tons of ways to contact people who are in your target demographic. It's not like you don't respond or talk to people. People can reach out to you in the She Podcast group, in your private community. You have friendships and you have tons of people who are telling you, here's what I love about any of your podcasts. The reviews being from who knows who it was, likely it's probably a person who the podcast is not intended for. They have a very different personality. They want a very serious show. They want to get more into the tech weeds or they want whatever it is. Great. Like you hear this podcast. If it's not for you, no problem. If there's podcasts you love, you can actually be the positive side of this, which is Go leave some positive reviews. Actually send an email to your favorite podcasters. Let them know that you really enjoy their content because that really does make a big difference. Especially when, I mean, we had someone in the Buzzsprout community group who her first review was a 2-star review and she asked the entire group, hey, I think I might just shut down the podcast if this is, you know, how am I going to be received?
So annoying. Yeah.
Just like leaving the positive reviews will help combat anybody's bad behavior that there'll be some positivity there too. So, you know, you may be the review that helps someone keep going. Elsie, I've talked to you, you know, kind of kept you 30 minutes over time. Thank you so much for being generous with your time and staying. Where could people find you if they want to learn more about you?
I'm all in, you know, obviously She Podcast. If you come to She Podcast Live, it would be amazing. All of the links are at shepodcast.com. And I think that the most active I am is on Twitter. It's the easiest for me to engage or disengage on Twitter. It's the fastest place, and I'm the Elsie Escobar there. Other than that, if you do want to just keep up with me, listen to my shows because that's about the only place that I'm sharing that specifically. And now, you know, I might be doing a little bit more lives here and there just inside the group, though, of the She Podcasts Facebook group. So if you're a woman or non-binary, please join our group. It's really lovely. It's a fantastic place to be. I like it when I go in there. I just don't want to be there very much.
Well, Elsie, on that final note, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll have to get you and maybe Jessica at the same time both back on the podcast sometime.
Oh my God. That's crazy. That's crazy talk.